Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, May 10th. Second hour coming at you. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to my friend Matt Swaim. Matt, who is the former host of the Catholic morning radio program called the Sunrise Morning Show, broadcast out of Cincinnati, Ohio, about 75 miles up the road from where we broadcast from, on Sacred Heart Radio there, and also picked up, I think, as an EWTN affiliate for a while there. Matt now is going to be working, or is working, with the Coming Home Network, an organization dedicated to accompanying people on their journey into the fullness of the Catholic faith, from whatever background they may find themselves. They're particularly helpful, I think, and invested in assisting those who are members of other Christian communities and their clergy, pastors, for example, who oftentimes sacrifice a lot to enter into the Catholic faith, but are so compelled by conviction that they can do no other. I found myself in that same position about 12 years ago, and the Coming Home Network was a great resource for me for support in many ways and direction and just a sounding board. And Matt's going to be working with them, getting ready, along with his wife, Colleen, and their son, to move to the Washington, D.C., where he'll be working and doing communication with the Coming Home Network there. So we're going to be talking to him at the bottom of the hour about his new adventure. And I'm asking a question of the day related to that. And it's a question that if you are not or were not Catholic, what is something that might attract you to the Catholic faith? At the same time, what is something that might repel you? What is something that would bring you part of the way to being Catholic, perhaps, but unable maybe to take that last step? 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text 573-4-BREAD-4 or email me MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I know a guy, for example, who is a Baptist pastor. I met him, it's been at least, I think, 6 to 7 years ago. Actually went to lunch, me and a friend of mine, with he and one of his colleagues, both Baptists, both profoundly attracted to and interested in becoming Catholic and trying to sort all that this out. My friend who knew them both brought me along because of my own experience of having left being Protestant clergy to become Catholic. And we went and sat down and had a nice long lunch and developed a bit of a friendship with each other. It seemed for a while there that particularly one of the two gentlemen that we had lunch with was going to finally make the decision to become Catholic. He seemed intellectually, spiritually all in and drawn to the church, despite the fact that it would be at a tremendous cost. However, it's now been several years since I've heard from him. And I know that his father, who was also a Baptist pastor, living with him now, I'm sure there's a lot of complications. And so, you know, I wonder, has this person come to this place where he's going to be content to appreciate Catholicism from the outside? Because there are people who do that, and they live in that sort of place. I don't know how comfortable they are, but they convince themselves that they need to stay where they are. And everybody has their own journey and so forth. I kind of came to that place myself. Back to what I was talking about last hour, I remember after we had become Catholic from a background of Methodist ministry, I was reading a book I had picked up by G.K. Chesterton, who I'm sure heard me reference multiple times before, the great British Catholic. He himself had been a convert, just a writer who will stretch your thinking in so many ways. Chesterton wrote a book called The Catholic Church and Conversion, in which he talks about this dynamic that happens to a person in finding themselves drawn to the Catholic faith. And Chesterton said they're basically, you know, whereas every journey has its own unique characteristics, there are three common steps in becoming Catholic. The first, he says, is being fair to the church. You know, you making the decision that you're going to push past the caricatures and the straw men, and you're really going to give the Catholic Church a fair hearing. That's always the first step. As the late Archbishop Fulton Sheen said, you know, there are not 100 people in this country who hate the Catholic Church, but there are millions who hate what they assume the Catholic Church to be. Give the Church a fair hearing. He said, it's not long after someone gives the Church a fair hearing, they will give it a fond hearing. The second step, he says, is discovering the Church. Once you've gotten past your straw man and you're easily pushed over argument and you've heard the Church on its own terms, you begin this delightful discovery, he says, of a land which is both strange and hospitable. It's like being in a foreign land that feels like home. And of course, I think a very accurate description. And you begin to discover all these wonders. And I was in that position where I had been fair to the Church. I began to realize that what I thought the Catholic Church taught, it didn't actually always teach, or that there were sound reasons, whether I agreed with them or not, but certainly well thought out reasons, even scriptural reasons for certain Catholic points of view. So I came to that second place of discovering the Church, and I would delight myself in these new discoveries. It was sort of an intellectual, pursuit. I even had some friends who were Catholic, and I even delighted in showing off my newfound Catholic knowledge to them. In fact, I said to one of them one time, you know what the Immaculate Conception is, right? Actually, it was a couple of Catholic friends, and they said, oh, well, that's when Jesus was conceived. I said, no, that's not. Here I was, the non-Catholic, telling them what the Catholic faith taught. I said, it's actually when Mary was conceived. They're like, really? So here I was discovering, and I would find myself defending the Catholic Church to people against misconceptions. But as I was reading this book, those first two steps, being fair to the Church, discovering the Church, I came to the third step. And when I read it, I was on a plane, I remember. And I laughed out loud. I'm sure my seatmate probably thought I was drunk. But the third step, according to Chesterton, is running away from the Church. That's when you realize the hook has been set. And you fight against it. I was there. A lot of people get there. Some people don't overcome it. They fight till the day they die. I would have fought it, but my wife wouldn't let me. Because once she got on the journey, and once her desire for and her belief in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist took over, she basically said, you can do what you want. I'm becoming Catholic. Anyway. So what attracts you, what might attract you to the Catholic faith, what might repel you? Elizabeth comments on Facebook, what might attract me, and I know Elizabeth is not a Catholic, though she has her children in Catholic school, and she herself went to Catholic school. Elizabeth is strong Methodist Christians. Elizabeth says attract, support and prioritizing family. Detract, closed table. Meaning, of course, that in the Catholic understanding, only those who are in full communion with the Catholic faith should receive Eucharist, as the Eucharist is the expression of our full unity in Christ. To receive the Eucharist when we are not, in fact, fully unified is a dishonest act. But for those, you know, it's kind of like maybe what we talked about when people see that image of the border wall down around San Diego, people reaching and touching fingertips in the broken places among the wall there, immigrant families who are split up by these circumstances. And those from the outside see it and go, my goodness, what kind of a country is this? Those who are on the outside of the communion table see that as exclusivity. And I understand that that can be the perception. I don't know any way to spin it that takes that completely away, but that's obviously an issue for Elizabeth. What she calls a closed table, an seemingly exclusive club to be part of. And then my friend Katrina simply posted a meme. I guess this is her answer to what repels her from the Catholic Church. She said, when we create church structures that do not listen to children who have been violated or believe their parents who stand horrified and broken and instead prefer the perpetrating adults, we essentially hang the millstone around the family's neck. It's it's a quote by Mary DeMuth. So obviously, I guess for Katrina, the church's failures or the certain members of the church's failure, including some priests and bishops, I guess, to protect children. Some of the things that have been unfortunately made more clear since in this long Lent we've been in since the Boston Globe first uncovered a pattern of not dealing with abusers back in the early 2000s, and which has become a worldwide phenomenon, the reality that we have to face as a church, our tendency at times to protect the institution as opposed to the individual. Doesn't do any good to talk about how that's true in a lot of other institutions. We're the church founded by Christ upon the apostles. And we have a profound responsibility. And so that, for Katrina, is, I guess, the issue. Of course, what I would say to Katrina, and if she's listening, she's certainly welcome to call, is human failure to live what the church teaches does not in any way affect the whether the truth of the church's claim historically to be the church founded by Christ upon the apostles is true or not. I mean, that can be simultaneously true while also recognizing our ongoing struggle by God's grace to live the fullness of the truth to which we've been entrusted. Amazingly, I was drawn to the faith even in the midst of all that being unveiled, because human weakness doesn't eradicate objective truth. We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show. Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on the birthday of Paul David Hewson, known by his stage name Bono, given to him by his friends when he was a kid, or young man anyway. They named him after a local hearing aid store called Bonovox, which means, I guess in Latin, good voice, and they started calling him Bono, and it stuck. Bono, of course, not only one of the great musicians, vocalists in the last 50 years, but certainly a great voice of human dignity in many ways as well. One little thing I didn't know about him, I didn't realize that he has glaucoma. That's one of the reasons that he wears sunglasses all the time. It's not just to be cool or vanity, but actually, as he says, it's part vanity, part privacy, and part sensitivity. Is it's got eyes that are very sensitive to light. Love that song, New Year's Day, from their album War, one of their songs that's been around the longest. My question of the day relates to conversions to the Catholic faith, what might attract somebody, and yet at the same time, what might repel somebody. I'm going to have Matt Swaim on at the bottom of the hour. Matt, who works for an organization called the Coming Home Network, that really works to assist those who are on that journey to becoming Catholic. And a lot of times people have those obstacles that they have to work through. Some are able to work through those obstacles or repulsions to the Catholic faith. Maybe it's some aspect of Catholic spirituality. There are some things, if you come with Protestant sensibilities, they're sometimes a little hard. You know, the Hail Holy Queen, for example, or maybe the infant Jesus of Prague, where Jesus has that crown that looks like the imperial margarine crown on the little boy Jesus, and he's got some kind of fancy coat or robe, and he's holding up what looks like to be the holy hand grenade of Antioch, and the world in his hand. Some of those types for Protestant sensibilities are a little rough, take a little overcoming. Not saying they're impossible to overcome, but they can be. My friend David, who I know has been on the program many times, he's a Christian church pastor, part of the independent Christian church movement. He said, the same reason I'm suspicious of big government, too many layers of bureaucracy and too much centralized power. And I hear that. Believe me, as a Methodist Christian, and as a Methodist pastor, I'm by nature an anti-bureaucratic type person. I have a problem with compliance. You know, I fill out my taxes, but only because I don't want to go to jail. Okay. And I was the same way with reports, denominational reports, and all the rest. And as a local pastor, I at times resented the bureaucracy of the church. The irony, of course, is now I have Methodist pastor friends who'll say things like, aren't you glad to be out of the bureaucracy of Methodism? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm a Catholic. We got 2,000 years of bureaucratic layers and structures. We're a bureaucracy on steroids. And not only that, I work for a diocese, a geographic area. I work for the bishop. I'm part of the bureaucracy. So I can understand the frustration. And let's face it, many aspects of the bureaucracy are not divine law. I mean, they're not. There are aspects of the Catholic bureaucracy that could be dispensed from that would in no way affect the fundamental nature of the church. And probably we should at times be willing to look at to what degree. And this was part of, I think, what was happening at the Second Vatican Council was trying to recognize where the church had become an ossified institution and where she had lost her identity as a dynamic movement of the Spirit. And that tension between, as David mentioned, centralized power and local subsidiarity has been a tension in the church from the beginning. Problem is you're tempted to get rid of that tension. Just have no centralized power. Well, then you have chaos. So there is a great purpose of hierarchy. But one of the things we struggle to do, and Pope Francis just tried to articulate this in his recent letter, that not every local question has to be settled by Rome, for example. So I get you. I hear you, David. Believe me, there's a reason to be suspicious of big government. But again, anarchy is not the solution. Continually striving to refine, and the church, we believe, is always being renewed. So what is it for you? What is an obstacle? What is it that attracts you to the Catholic faith? 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Maybe it's some theological point. I know there's a guy that I'm friends with on Facebook. He's always weighing in on different stuff, and I can feel his interior conflict. He's just he's kind of in that position, I think. Like when you've got one foot on the boat and one foot on the deck, it's not a position you can maintain for a long, long time. And I think at some point interiorly, he's going to have to come to the place where he's either in the boat or on the deck when it comes to the Catholic faith. Though for some reason, as I said, there are some who can live in that tension and call themselves. I've got friends who call themselves, you know, Methodists because they are Methodist, but they have strong Catholic sympathies. Anyway, 573-4-BREAD-4. If you want to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Got a friend from email from my friend Fred, listeners to the program. Talking a little baseball, he says, Mike, bottom of ninth, game tied. Best player just gets thrown out of the game. That best player, of course, would be Bryce Harper of the Washington Nationals. Brings in a 185 pinch hitter. Home run. Eat your heart out, Reds owners. Title of the email, Dusty Does It Again, a reference to Dusty Baker, the current manager of the Washington Nationals, who are, I think, lead the National League East. I haven't checked the standings, though they're being swept by the Cubs. Maybe the Mets are leading now. Anyway, but Dusty Baker, who was fired by the Reds a couple of years ago. Dusty, who lost in the playoffs. That was his worst offense as a Reds manager. I will agree with you, Fred. If the worst thing that we Reds fans have to worry about is having a manager who loses in the playoffs. We should be able to live with that. 573-4-BREAD-4. You want to chime in on the program. Saw an article in Variety magazine about how TV shows are finally ready to have a serious talk about religion. And this is an article by Cynthia Littleton talking about two particular shows, one called The Path, which is on Hulu, and the other called Greenleaf. The latter bores deep into the dark side of the family behind a prosperous Christian megachurch in Tennessee. Both shows are evidently supposed to reveal that the TV has a more nuanced understanding of religion now and is more comfortable with making religion a theme in its television programs. Here's the thing, and this was like the case the issue that I had with the show, I think that was put out by ABC called The Real O'Neills. I'll have to get back into this because I think we've got a phone call. Mike calling in on line one. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I wanted to comment on your question with regard to the bureaucracy of the church that does turn people off. I'm aware of that. Like a number of other people, both lay and ordained in our diocese, I serve as an advocate for people seeking annulments in the church. Just keep that in mind. Meanwhile, as you know, the church has norms and guidelines for how we will do certain things. And let's say, for instance, the words that would be said during the height of the Mass, the transubstantiation of bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ. Those are two examples, in my humble opinion, in which our church is trying its very best to be as faithful to the Word of God as we can. And that's part of the reason for insisting that certain things happen. Only because the church wants to be as sure as possible that it's faithful. Because you know how the church regards marriage, how important it is.
Absolutely.
And the Lord has told us marriage is for life, period, unless it was an unlawful marriage. And so we simply go through this investigation to find out what may have been wrong with the origins of the marriage. And luckily, as you know, church has recently, if this is the right term, streamlined that process so that we can make it shorter, because it can be a very long process at times. And I'm not so much trying to defend the bureaucracy, as you call it.
Hey, Deacon Mike, your voice is kind of breaking up. It's kind of some kind of weird digital dynamic going on with it. I think I got what you were trying to say, though, and I appreciate it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the key is for us to not ever forget the reason the guidelines are in place. Sometimes the guidelines can become an entity in themselves. Does that make sense?
That's right. I think so. To be faithful to the word of the Lord becomes the point here.
Mm. Deacon Mike, really, we're about out of time. I really appreciate the call. Appreciate your ministry, okay?
Thank you so much, Mike. Yours, too.
Be careful.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you.
That's Deacon Mike. Yeah, great point indeed. We are not against, structure is not a bad thing, okay, folks? Hierarchy means sacred order. Beats anarchy any day. Anyway, I'll be back with Matt Swaim. We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. This song, number one 40 years ago by the Silvers, Boogie Fever. I made a little bit of a comeback with Despicable Me. I remember my sister had the 45 LP. You see, kids, they had these things once called records. Anyway, remember it well. My next guest was probably not even a twinkle in his father's eye when that song was number one. Matt Swaim. Matt, who is the former host of the Sunrise Morning Show, based out of Cincinnati and Sacred Heart Radio, just up the road from us here in Lexington, where we broadcast from. He is now the communications coordinator for the Coming Home Network, based out of Zanesville, Ohio. His books include Prayer in the Digital Age and Your College Faith, Own It. He and his family are based in the Cincinnati area. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, great to have you on. And you were born after the disco era, I would assume.
Well, I was protected from it for the last year of the 70s that I was alive for. So I was born in 79.
There you go.
I was spared by the mercy of God.
Well, I was, of course, surprised when I saw the news that, you know, I know you had done a great job first as producer of the Sunrise Morning Show, and then as co-host there with Anna, I believe it is. And
Anna Mitchell, yeah.
You did that for how many years?
Well, we co-created the show back in 2007, so it was almost 10 years on the same program. And 10 years in any kind of a media venture is a small eternity, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it was time. It was time to do something new and you know, do something that still was in line with what I felt the Lord was calling me to do. Still in tune with my gifts, but maybe a little bit different. Just for a fresh set of eyes on a new apostolate. I mean, you know how that is. It's the same reason that bishops rotate pastors every few years, just to make sure that they're not getting stagnated.
Oh, absolutely. And then when I found out just, I think this past week, that you were going to work for the Coming Home Network, which is a ministry and an organization that has meant a lot personally to me on my own journey to the Catholic faith. For those who do not know, give us a brief description of what the Coming Home Network is about.
Well, the Coming Home Network was basically started as a group of Protestant pastors who, on their own kind of independent journeys, found themselves more drawn through study, especially of the Church Fathers, toward the Catholic Church. And this caused a dilemma for them because Marcus Grodi and his companions realized that as pastors of Presbyterian congregations and Methodist congregations and what have you, if you became Catholic, then suddenly you were sawing off a limb you were sitting on in terms of your career. I don't know if you know anything about this, Mike, but sometimes if you're a pastor and you convert to Catholicism, you don't have a job anymore.
Yeah, they sort of frowned in my Methodist church of me remaining a Methodist pastor while I was simultaneously Catholic, you know.
Right, right. So they set up kind of a multilateral operation. One was to kind of provide resources for pastors who had just a heart for studying the Word of God, and studying, the faith, so that they could freely, go down that road and have as many resources as possible to kind of, satiate that hunger. But in addition, to set up, methods to support those people through prayer and sometimes through other resources, material resources, once they found themselves ready to take that jump. So, fast forward to 2016. And in addition to being what it was initially founded to be, which was that resource for those pastors and that information bank for those pastors, it is now a repository for laity, for married couples, for people from all walks of life. It has the EWTN program, The Journey Home, which airs every Monday night, and is one of the most popular programs on the network where people tell their stories. I know you've told yours on that show, so has Leo Brown, so have I, and just a ton of other different outreaches that they're looking to expand and really help share the joy of what it is to rediscover the faith and to take the gifts that you were given that led you to be a pastor in the first place and figure out how do those work in your life as a Catholic gentleman.
You know, one of the, I have to imagine one of the fascinating things about the about working with the Coming Home Network is, you know, just like there are stages of someone's conversion to Christianity as a whole, you know, you have those who are, you know, intellectually curious, all the way to someone who's ready to enter into the life of Christian discipleship. I'm sure you get a whole broad spectrum. You know, you have those who first find themselves curious about Catholicism, those who've hit some obstacle that they can't seem to get over, and then those who are just ready to take that step.
Well, I mean, that's just the way that that human searching goes, right?
That's right.
When it comes to anything, if you're going to try and figure out whether or not the water is worth swimming in, you dip the toe in, and you're like, it's a little chilly, but then your toe's in there for a little longer, and you're like, it's not that bad. And then you wait up to, once you get up to your waist, you know you're all right. But it is really kind of being respectful of people's journeys that is key here. You can't just, whack somebody on the head with apologetics and assume that overnight they're going to become Catholic. I mean, God is a respecter of our will. He is a respecter of our freedom, and he wants us to be drawn to him out of love. And it's hard to love something that you're not willing to explore. It's hard to, be in love with the person of Jesus Christ if you don't take those steps to learn more about him. So this is why people who have that background in clergy are such a gift to the Catholic Church, because they have had years and years, decades in some cases, of getting to know Christ through their congregation, getting to know Christ through their seminary study. And this is just another level for them. It's not a, well, I got to throw everything I learned out the window type of thing. It is a completion of a search. At least it was for me. I'm sure that it probably was for you.
Absolutely. It was not a rejection of who I'd been. It was in many ways the consummation. We're here with Matt Swaim, who's the communications coordinator for the Coming Home Network, and whose books include Prayer in the Digital Age and Your College Faith, Own It. I would imagine that having been on that journey like you have been, Matt, and somebody who was not a Catholic, didn't have a Catholic family tree, you therefore have a particular insight into that journey for others. And how are you going to bring that to work in your role as communications coordinator?
Well, part of it is just rediscovering the joy of your first love, as we hear in the Book of Revelation, realizing what it's like to have that perpetual conversion, that perpetual rediscovery of the joy of the Lord as your strength. And one of the coolest things about the Catholic faith is that you can, it has so many layers, so much richness to it, and being able to communicate that richness is just a real gift. You know, I kind of think about the Journey Home and the Coming Home Network as sort of like being like spiritual obstetricians. Because I get to deliver babies so often, so they always get to be with that family when that cool moment happens. It's kind of like that for the Coming Home Network. You think of some of the pastors who get to do baby baptisms, and what a cool thing that is for them to be with these families as they go through these really neat moments. And since the church is the family of God, this is the reason that the Journey Home has become such a popular program, not just to non-Catholics who are trying to find out information about the church, but to cradle lifelong practicing Catholics, because it reminds them of what they have. There's kind of that twofold thing. I think one of the things that we're going to try and remind people of moving forward with the Coming Home Network is that it's not just for people who are searching their way into the Catholic Church. There's a place in our apostolate for people who have never left. People who have for years and years given their ministry to the church, maybe they now want to figure out what are some ways that they can tap into resources, tap into the knowledge and experience of people like yourself who used to be a pastor, a Methodist pastor, and use those resources, those skills to instill the faith in lifelong practicing Catholics. So there's just a wealth of things that we can do. And as you've probably realized, I mean, the the possibilities are endless. Even as far as we've gotten with the Catholic Church to have a billion of us worldwide, we're still behind the curve on a lot of outreach.
Yes.
Facets. We don't have Sunday school, most of us, in the Catholic Church, right?
That's right.
And you can go to a 400-person church in, my parents' 400-person church in Wilmore, and they've got 6 adult Sunday school classes every Sunday, and you can't find one at your local parish. So we're still behind the curve, but the truth is with us. The full story is with us. So if we could just tap into that, man. What an awesome opportunity that would be.
Absolutely. We only got about 40 seconds left, Matt. What you're talking about is spiritual midwifery, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you're helping accompany people through this birth. And I know you're getting ready to make another geographic move as well, and certainly pray for you. D.C. area, right?
Yeah, that's right. Headed to D.C., our little outpost there.
Well, Matt, blessings to you and Colleen and your little boy. Maybe you could get some side work in the Reds' bullpen.
Well, they're taking anybody right now.
Hey, Matt, thanks for your great work, and I look forward to talking to you again soon, all right?
All right, take care, Mike.
All right, we'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
I think it's really hard. Knowing.
Through the storm. The shore, you give it all, but I want more, and I'm waiting for you, with or without you.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Happy birthday to Bono, 56 years old today. This song, number one, 1987, With or Without You. I've heard speculation, never confirmed, that song really is about Bono's relationship with God. And anybody, I think, who is an honest believer can relate to that sentiment at times, as have some of the prophets throughout the scriptures. There are those times in which you can't, you feel as though you can't live with your belief in God, and yet to contemplate life without God is completely untenable. Was it Chesterton who I talked about earlier who said, when belief in God becomes difficult, the tendency is to turn away from him, but in heaven's name, to what? Whether that's true about Bono and the song, I have no idea. But I know he is a man of genuine faith. Imperfect, just like all of us, but genuine faith, no doubt. 573-4-BREAD-4. We're talking a little bit about faith today. Great conversation with Matt Swaim there, and hopefully I can get him on more regularly now that he's no longer on his own radio show, but his communications director for the Coming Home Network. Great organization. And he'll be moving along with his family to Washington, D.C. And I like that imagery of spiritual midwifery. You're accompanying people through this profound spiritual journey. And I don't want you to misunderstand when I say that my journey and the journey of others, I think, into the Catholic faith from, let's say, a Protestant Christian background, for example, though those are the only type of conversions that the Coming Home Network assists with, people from all walks of life. When I say it was the consummation, I don't mean that in becoming Catholic, it was that I had arrived. Much like entering into a marriage is not the culmination of an achievement, but or the crowning of an achievement, but the entry into a whole new reality. So becoming Catholic, while a consummation of what my life and my Christian faith had been about, was in a sense, an entering into a whole new journey of discovery that will last for the rest of my life and really into eternity, because God is a mystery like swimming in the ocean. There's no limit to the new joys of truth that one can discover, even in the midst of suffering and difficulty and doubt and questions and all the rest. My question of the day relates to becoming Catholic. Maybe you've been listening to the program a while. You're not Catholic. And maybe there's something that appeals to you about the Catholic faith that you'd be comfortable sharing that attracts you to Catholicism. At the same time, maybe there's something that is an obstacle. It repels you. It's something that you can't quite get over. Some teaching of the Catholic Church, perhaps, or some reality of Catholicism. Like Katrina, for her, it was how the church is how the church has handled the abuse crisis in the church. Or maybe for others, there are just too many implications that would be created by one's becoming Catholic. Maybe divisiveness in a marriage or in family life, whatever. I did get an email asking a question about this Our Lady Undoer of Knots novena that I've been praying, really thanks to the encouragement of a friend. And I've posted, there's a link to it on the show's Facebook page. You could just Google it up to novena, N-O-V-E-N-A. It's a 9-day prayer. Novena to Our Lady Undoer of Knots. Person who emailed me said that her husband and her are planning on saying this novena over a very difficult knotty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, family situation. And she had a question. I guess she and her husband say a daily rosary, which is a beautiful thing. That rosary, which is a beautiful meditative prayer exercise that focuses in on the mysteries of Christ's life and the life of the Blessed Mother. She said, we noticed the novena incorporates the rosary. Is the novena a supplement to the rosary or in addition to the daily rosary? My guess is that it's a supplement to the rosary, because part of the novena is you say three decades, the prayers of groups of 10 prayers of the Hail Marys. And then you pray this, there's a meditation and then the rest of the rosary. And then there's a Our Lady Undoer of Knots prayer. So my guess is it's a supplement to the daily rosary, and it's a beautiful novena. I'm on day 9, and we'll see what God is about through it. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or chime in. I was talking earlier in the program about this story I saw in Variety magazine about how TV shows are finally ready to have a serious talk about religion, these new shows, one called The Path, and another one which is called Greenleaf, which in the second one bores deep into the dark side of the family behind a prosperous Christian megachurch. My only question is, yes, maybe TV's willing to deal with religion, Hollywood willing to deal with religion in its TV shows. It's not a taboo topic, you know. I mean, you see a lot of TV shows over the years, it's as though people's spiritual lives don't even exist. I mean, there's no mention of church. That's one thing I'll give credit to for The Simpsons. I mean, at least The Simpsons go to church for all their problems and dysfunction, right? I mean, Homer and Marge do go to church with the Reverend Lovejoy. There was even one episode where Homer and Bart almost became Catholic. That is my favorite episode of all time. But my only question about Hollywood is, okay, it's one thing to talk about religion. Are you willing to not make caricatures of people who are religious believers? Like this show, The Real O'Neills, I think, out on ABC, which paints every religious believer as just a shallow hypocrite. Now, is it not possible to show that people are imperfect people who are a whole mixture of different motives and struggles and all the rest, and yet are also sincere believers? Because that's the way most of us are. Becoming a Christian or being a person of faith is not about putting on some veneer and pretending you have your life all together when in reality you don't. That's like assuming the worst about believers. I'm not saying there aren't people who are intentional hypocrites, but there are a lot of people who are also sort of unintentional hypocrites. We recognize our inability, our shortcoming to live up to what we believe and our faith. I mean, in the Catholic Church, that's why we have confession. It's an acknowledgement right from the start. You're going to come up short. So if TV is going to seriously present religion, it should present it by assuming the best about people and not that religious people are all just a bunch of fakes. That's what I can't stand and I want no part of, because whereas I also don't like some Christian movie depictions of making Christians into one-dimensional people who have no struggles and only triumph, at the other side of the equation, I think there's the opposite extreme. So we'll see. Anyway, we got Philip calling up on line one. Philip, good morning. Philip, are you there?
Yeah, I sure am.
Hey, Philip. What's going on?
Oh, Mary Undoer of Knots, the Rosary is on YouTube. You can play it along and pray.
Oh, wow.
With it on YouTube. There's a foreign priest on there, but he speaks in English. He's a little difficult to understand, but he prays the entire novena. I'm pretty sure it's the novena. It's at least the one rosary.
Hmm. And it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. It's excellent. That's how I pray my rosary every day. I listen to one of the in the Chapel of Divine Mercy. Play it on YouTube. It's great.
Yeah, but just another reason to love YouTube. Not only sports highlights, not only home improvement projects, but praying the novena to Mary Undoer of Knots. Philip, thanks for the heads up.
Hey, God bless, brother.
All right, you too. Fantastic. So check that out, novena to Mary Undoer of Knots on YouTube. Thanks for the call, Philip. All right, we got a couple minutes left. Let's spin up the Dollar Catechism wheel. We'll go to random.org, our random number generator, and we'll see what Providence has in store for us. We'll enter in a number between 1 and 2865, total number of paragraphs in the catechism. Oh, wow. I just dialed up 666. And believe it or not, unlike people with, what is it, tristecophobia or something like that, whatever, the fear of the number 13, buildings that skip from floor 12 to floor 14, the Catholic Catechism does have a paragraph of 666. So we'll see what this is about. We'll see how much sense of humor the crafters of the catechism have. 666. This is actually a paragraph in brief at the end of the section. He ascended into heaven and is seated at the right hand of the Father. Of course, this past Sunday, in most dioceses, the celebration of the Ascension, the Ascension Thursday moved to Sunday. Here's what the paragraph says. Jesus Christ, the head of the church, precedes us into the Father's glorious kingdom, so that we, the members of his body, may live in the hope of one day being with him forever. There's no reason to fear. No reason to fear the devil either, right? All that 666 stuff. By the way, that's oftentimes been interpreted by many biblical scholars as a reference to Nero, who was an antichrist of sorts in his own day. His name, a coded numerical value of 666. I actually had a professor when I was in seminary in an evangelical school who taught a class on the book of Revelation, and the course number was New Testament 666. So you got to appreciate that sense of humor. But I love how the catechism, the first two words of that paragraph, Jesus Christ, the head of the church. Take that, devil. He has led the way. He's preparing a place for us. By God's grace, may he lead us there. Be back with you tomorrow. Mary Undoer of Knots, pray for us. This has been the Mike Allen Show.